Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Our show is turning to weather. Our weather guys are back with us. John Martin soon will be back. He's coming at around noon today. But Steve Ackerman, our other weather guy, is here, Vice Chancellor for Research and Grad Education at UW-Madison, also a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. So as we talk with Steve and then John joins in as well, I hope you'll join in with your questions. What's your local weather like? Wondering when the winter weather will end. Join in. The number to call is 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas, ideas at WPR.org. Ideas at WPR.org. Steve Ackerman, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here on a rather interesting weather day for the entire state.
it is indeed. We'll talk about that. But we just finished talking with Bassam about hazardous chemicals, and when they're released into the air, how long do they stay in our atmosphere?
So if they stay in the troposphere, which is 6 miles and above. 6 miles is sort of in the Arctic regions. In the mid-latitudes, we go higher, and in the tropics, it's even higher. It lasts about a week, and that's sort of like the recycling time, and it's associated with, the fact that we have precipitation in the atmosphere, and that'll help mix things up and bring it out of the atmosphere. If it makes it into the stratosphere, which I don't think this is the situation in this case. It can go around the globe and stay up there for years. And we learned that from doing nuclear weapons tests back in the 50s and 60s. They would explode them up in the stratosphere, and then those radioactive particles would be around for months because there's none of that kind of circulation that'll bring it out of the stratosphere, unlike in the troposphere.
Interesting. Well, here in Wisconsin, back in our atmosphere of Wisconsin, we've had some wild weather.
We've had some wild weather. I had a trip last week, so I happened to get out before they closed a lot of the airports down. And by my house, we live on the north end of Madison. There was some snow pellets. When I got home, my neighbors did my driveway, which was really nice of them, and got the snow off. But there was, ice on the driveway and ice on the back patio. And I knew this storm was coming, and I knew I had to get that ice off. Otherwise, it's just going to be a mess. And I did, but it's still a mess. I didn't expect us to get this much rain.
Well, the rain that where is it coming from?
So in this case, it's coming from the Gulf of Mexico. So the storm, it hit we probably saw a lot of articles about the storm in L.A. and California regions. They got a lot of snow out there. And so that's the storm that it's bringing the weather to us. And in addition, it kind of wraps up some moisture that comes from the Gulf Stream that feeds into that storm and kind of gives us the large types of precipitation that we've been having.
And California, the snow is not a usual occurrence at this time of the year, I don't think.
Yeah, really unusual. I think I heard that L.A. actually got some snow. There was a lot of snow in the mountains, which isn't, all that unfamiliar because rising air is going to lead to snowfall. I happened to be in San Diego at a meeting, miserable, because you go to San Diego from Wisconsin in February and you expect you'll be able to swim.
Yeah,
but it was too cold for that and too rainy. They also got a lot of rain.
So the snow there, at least in the mountains, that snow is going to hang around. And for water issues that they have, I would think it would be helpful.
Yeah, so that'll really help. Snowpack in the West in general is really good for feeding the reservoirs and the things that provide water for agriculture and for the people that live there. So, yeah, it's a good thing, provided it doesn't melt too fast, because that can lead to flash flooding.
Yeah, I have a friend who is a sort of a ski instructor out there in Utah, and having a wonderful year this year compared to like the last couple of years. The snowpack wasn't there, but it sure is in spades this year.
It sure is in spades this year, and COVID is down too, so people are willing to get up and get on a plane and travel as well, which also helps.
Well, somebody wants to know when the winter cold is going to end.
May, maybe. Well, you know, and I joke with that, but, you know, some of it is, what do you define as winter cold, right? So to me, I don't really think about it being really cold until you get below zero Fahrenheit. Then to me, that's cold. You know, today it was in the mid and upper 30s, and I think it's even going to get up into 40s. You know, that's not that cold because thankfully in southern Wisconsin we have rain. But it does feel chilly when you go outside, but it's nice not to have it freezing rain.
The amount of rain that fell in southern Wisconsin or parts of it, had that been snow, I got to believe we'd have a heck of a lot of snow.
I got to believe that, too. I mean, when I got up this morning, when I checked our range gauge, so between midnight and 6 a.m., we had already over half an inch of precipitation. So even a wet snow, you think 10 to 1. So that would have been 5 inches already. And that was only the beginning of the
It got worse.
Yeah, it got worse.
it got a lot more worse.
And I'm tired of shoveling snow.
I bought a new snowblower. My old one broke.
I'm thinking of that, getting a two-stage.
The one I got is, I'm so glad the other one broke, to be perfectly honest, because this one runs much better. Even with wet snow, I don't have to worry about it. It just...
And that's why I'm thinking of a two-stage, because mine broke, and I got it fixed. And then we had that first, you know, a couple of weeks ago, that real wet snow. And, yeah, it didn't really do much. It threw it, you know, a foot or so, because
well,
it was so wet.
You know, mine's going several, you know, we're talking 10, 15 feet. So I'm really happy with that. And when I found out that it was going to cost me, the cost of repairing the old one was within $150 of a new one.
Then you go with the new one. Right? Yeah.
I just decided to go with the new one. And he said, well, can I keep the other one for parts? And I said, of course you can. I want to drag it back home.
Right, right. Well, that's true.
Gary and Superior, we'll go to you. What's on your mind?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So... I seem to be able to have a smell when I'm in weather where it's very cold and there's a lot of fresh snow. It seems to, because I said to this my friend the other day, I said, oh, can you smell that snow smell? And they kind of looked at me like I was crazy. But I seem to have a certain particular smell. I can smell it. Is there a smell to snow and cold air?
Boy, that's really interesting.
Yeah, what does it smell like to you? Is there anything close that you could, you know, sort of make a comparison? Gary?
And nice and clean. That's all I can, the only way I can describe it.
So there have been reports and people talk about a snow with a rain, and that smell is generated as the rain interacts with microbes in the soil. But if you're up in Superior, I would imagine, you know, by now the ground is frozen. So even with that snowfall, you're not going to kind of get that similar smell that you get from rain. So that's really interesting.
So it's a so you're saying, Gary, it's just kind of a, like, clean?
Yes, a very clean, fresh smell. And somebody was telling me, oh, you're just probably smelling the pine trees. And I thought, well, I know what pine trees smell like, and it doesn't quite smell like pine trees, but I just sense this particular odor.
You know, I'm wondering now, is it an odor or the lack of an odor? You know, so when the snowfall comes in, it clears the air out of other odors and things that you may no longer be smelling.
You know, you might have something
and,
there,
you know,
Steve.
And I'm thinking of the movie Lord of the Rings when they're in the cave and they're trying to figure out which way to go. And eventually the wizard figures it out by fresh air smell. Right?
Yeah.
So maybe that's what I'm thinking. Maybe it's not fresh smell as opposed to no smells.
Yeah. Gary, that's something to think about.
That's really interesting.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jill emailed us. She's planning a wedding in September 2024 in Milwaukee. and wonders if looking at historical weather data is of any use for planning purposes.
I would think it's useful for planning purposes to see if there's any kind of weak period in which there's less rainfall in that area. It doesn't guarantee that you won't have rainfall or bad weather, but at least you'd be basing it on you know, some climate data, so it'll increase your chances that you'll have better weather.
So where would you go for those data?
National Weather Service. And if she's going, where was the wedding?
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. So I'd go with the National Weather Service office in Milwaukee. They would keep that data.
Yeah.
Or actually, even in the state climate office here at University of Wisconsin-Madison in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, they'll have weather data for Milwaukee as well.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay.
My grandmother always said, get married on a full moon. And I was always like, when I got married, I was like, why? And she was just like, well, you know, her basic argument was that we whenever there's a full moon, we see it. And so it must not rain that much. was like, the border between folklore and science.
But, oh, man. Cheryl in Unity. Hi.
Hi. Well, that was quick. I was just calling about the man that said he could smell snow when it's cold. I'd just be curious to know if he's got some farmers in his ancestry, because where I live around here, if you ask any farmer, they'll tell you that they can smell snow when it's coming, when it's really cold.
Really? Okay.
Cheryl, thank you.
Yeah.
We might have to bring this up with John when he...
See if he knows. He's our snow guy.
And if he's ever smelled snow when it's snowing. Cheryl, thanks. We're going to take that issue up after we take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, you can call in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Steve Ackerman has been with me for the last 15 minutes, and he'll stay, and John Martin will be joining us after our news break. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. The weather guys are back with us. John Martin will be joining us pretty quickly here, professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. With me in the studio right now, Steve Ackerman, vice chancellor for research and grad education at UW-Madison. Have you participated in citizen science before? We want to get into that. What regular observations do you make about the weather? You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Well, we were talking about smelling snow, and Will in La Crosse has a comment relating to that, Steve. So let's go there. Will, thank you for waiting.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. Yes, I've noticed that when it's getting ready to rain or getting ready to snow, I can smell that. And I'm thinking it could be the high pressure, low pressure thing changing and bringing ozone closer to the surface.
Hmm.
Anything to that?
You know, I had heard that about snowfall associated with rain, particularly thunderstorms, with regard to lightning generated. But it's hard to bring down ozone from up high. It's just too stable to bring it down to the surface. So I wouldn't think it. I was thinking, and you know, quickly looking on my phone, that as you know, one of the things that I had heard of, and there is, you know, science that shows some of this, that in the rain, when it first rains and the rain mixes with the soil, when the soil is not frozen, you generate smells through those biological processes. I'm wondering now also in the roadways during the winter. So in the winter, if the land is frozen, you're not going to get that biological activity, but you could have those chemical reactions with chemicals that are in the roadway that haven't washed off because of that, or salt that's in the roadway. So it's absolutely fascinating. I hadn't really heard this before. The other thing is that I sort of raised the issue, and I wonder if this plays a role too, is it a clean smell or a lack of smell?
Yeah.
So again, it would be interesting to correlate with temperature, because we smell less better. We smell less better in cold weather, because the molecules aren't moving around as much, because the movement of molecules is a function with the temperature. So this is a fascinating question about smelling snow.
Does snow smell?
That's John just walked in, and he's our snow expert. So.
No, I think the rain stinks. I don't think the snow does. Yeah. No. Yeah, I think I've noticed that. Yeah, I think there's something to it. Stan Getzelman had something in his book about that. There's something about isotopes of, it's not just water, it's something else that gives the snow a distinct smell.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Chris in Milwaukee has another comment about it, so let's go there. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Yeah, definitely there's a fresh snow smell. And I've never really noticed if I'm smelling it before it comes, but when it snows, there's a definite smell that's associated with it.
Okay. So Chris is smelling it as well.
So Chris is smelling it as well.
I guess when I notice that it's snowing, I don't go outside because you sit there and sulk because I know I'm going to have to shovel my driveway.
Oh, wrong attitude. Sorry.
Chris, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, but is it a smell or is it a lack of smell?
Yeah, we'll have to do some more investigation.
Yeah. Hmm. Tom in Lake Geneva has a whole different question. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hello, top of the beautiful morning to you.
To you as well.
The reason that I called in is I'm an architect. Not to brag, but I've been licensed in 11 different states. I've actually done commissions in Canada, Belarus, Russia, and I actually had a branch office in Tokyo, Japan for 3 years. My situation is we've pretty much limited our firm to these beautiful monolithic thin shell concrete domed buildings. Mm-hmm. We just to give you an example, we can build a new high school in a domed configuration at least one quarter less cost, and we can do it in a third of the time. Our structures are indestructible. They would know a 300-mile-an-hour tornado was happening. And the problem around our nation, really around the world, is our building codes are no longer responding to today's violent weather. Look at the five or six schools that were leveled several years ago by a mid-level tornado in Joplin, Missouri, and Moore, Oklahoma. Luckily, 2 hours prior to class time. Look at the $57 billion damage with, I think, 200-plus lives in the Florida area. And it looks like we're going to go ahead and keep on trusting our building codes that are not going to protect us in violent weather.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, violent weather like tornadoes, it's, you know, the F5's tornadoes is going to be pretty hard to have any durability. Usually, it doesn't matter what it hits, it's all destroyed.
Yeah, plus it's debris in the air, too, that's being thrown around by those tornadoes. I don't know what kind of structure will sustain being hit by debris, not by the storm itself.
Yeah, and I wonder if the building codes change as the climate changes. So building codes for a particular area may change as the climate for that area changes.
Yeah, I would bet, I don't doubt that there's a lag because there's a reluctance to admit that things are kind of getting different. And if it intrudes on somebody's safe space, they get a little bit antsy about that. But there probably eventually there's going to be changes. And you know, sometimes you need to make sure you mandate them.
So the base of this or the root of it is violent weather. I mean, it seems like we are having more violent weather incidents. Do the statistics bear that out? It seems like it.
I don't think there's any more violent tornadoes than there have been in the recent past. But the problem is it's difficult to measure. Your population goes up. The density of observers goes up. How do you filter all of that stuff out? The same with the hurricanes. I guess the science is suggesting that there'll be a larger number of intense hurricanes. But maybe, is it that right? Or in a smaller number of total hurricanes or something like
right.
that? Yeah.
That's all right.
So But the evidence for that actually arriving is a little bit scant, in my opinion. I don't think we've seen, you know, an alarming increase in the number of really intense hurricanes that have, at least that have made landfall. So yeah, maybe it's coming.
And I think particularly with tornadoes, that's a really good argument, right? Because the more the top population grows, the more we have better communication, the mm-hmm. more reports you're going to have.
Right.
If it was constant, I bet we would see a trend in the number of reporting.
Yeah, I did see an article just in the last week about the fact that tornadoes seem to be moving eastward more.
Yeah, that's work. I think it's Victor Gensini down at Northern Illinois has done that work. Ah. That the severe storm season has moved, tornado alley's moved a little bit to the east. Yeah, I've just read the same thing. I think it's Victor. I hope I'm right.
Do you think it's reporting, or is it due to the environmental changes setting up?
He's pretty rigorous. I'll bet you he's weeded through all the reporting stuff. And, in fact, you're moving away from places that were traditionally tornado alley to places that weren't. And so one might guess that fewer people are attuned to paying attention in the places where it's invading, but I don't know.
Yeah, interesting. Tom, thanks again. Let's go to Thomas in Manitowoc. Hi, Thomas.
Good afternoon. I've always wondered, is there any extra benefits in rainwater compared to groundwater for watering plants? And if there is, if you have a electrical storm, I've heard that that is more beneficial also. And if it is, you store that water, like in a rain barrel or a bulk tank, how long do those benefits last before it dissipates?
Mm, interesting.
Well, that's I would argue, because I have really nice gardens and I really love my tulips, that, you know, I have rain barrels out that I put to catch the fresh water, because if you're pulling the water up from the ground, it tends to be saltier. Mm. And so we even see that in our household. So we have regular faucets to do the dishes and things like that. But in watering the plants and the households or what we drink, we get the bottled water because mm-hmm. it has less mineral content in it. Now, maybe the plants like the minerals. I'm not sure. But that's why I kind of lean towards the rainfall.
Hmm. I don't know anything about that. And whether it gets ionized in a thunderstorm with electricity, I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm more thinking about not the rainfall so much as the groundwater, which can be pretty mineral.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Yurtis in Colfax, we'll go to you now. Hi, Yurtis.
Hi. I'm calling about the rain. I live in a small town, and we have a driveway that's a tenth of a mile long. I mean, we're outside of town. We're in the country. But there's been people wearing metal crampons on their shoes to get by. I have cross-country ski poles to go to the mailbox, and I just fell this morning. I just flipped. I mean, it was scary, and a man in town just broke his leg outside the post office, and acquaintances I know have fallen, and people are worried about their animals that are outside that are falling. This is very treacherous weather, and I just wondered if this is a new normal for winter, or is this something that is going to pass? I'm actually quite scared about it.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't consider it something that's going to become the new norm. It's something that probably happens every winter. It's a weird coincidence this time. We have a widespread amount of slushy and snowy ice from the last week's weather in the southern part of the state, and then rain on top of it at temperatures that are not really that warm. I was surprised that it wasn't so warm this morning. I thought it was going to be in the 40s, and it is in northern Illinois. It's in the high 40s, and that relatively warm air is really just held off from here. So you're not getting a ton of melting from this rain, and the thing you slip on ice anyway is a thin coating of liquid water, and if the rain puts it on there for you, it's much more treacherous. So rain on top of ice is a very bad deal. You are 100% right, but I think that can happen in almost any winter in this state. Yeah. It's just particularly robust today and with unfortunate consequences.
Mm.
And it's not just the rain on top of it. I mean, I went out over the weekend to try and clear some of the ice off on our patio and driveway. And, yeah, there were times where I almost went down.
Yeah, it's not been nice this week. Yeah. Absolutely right. The water on top is the cherry on the
makes
sundae.
It really, really slippery. Yeah.
I chose not to do my morning 3 miles through the neighborhood.
Very smart. Very smart.
Instead, I just laid in bed for another 45 minutes.
How else would he have ascended to his position without being so smart?
Oh, man. Marcus in Milwaukee, we'll go to you now. Hi, Marcus.
Hi. So in terms of the question about hurricanes and tornadoes, I believe in the last, 10 years, I want to say we've had, where they said it was a 1-in-100-year storm, and in the last, 10 years for hurricanes, they've had at least one every, other year, whereas a 1-in-100-year storm, so it's kind of I don't quite think that that's 100 years. In terms of tornadoes, Professor Fujita from Japan, I think he was at Oklahoma State, created the Fujita scale, where it's 1 through 5, and F5 was called the fifth finger of God because it literally rewrote the landscape. I mean, just destroyed everything. And they've now had to go to the EF scale, which is the enhanced Fujita scale, which now goes from 6 to 10.
Yeah.
No. The enhanced Fujita scale still goes to 5.
To 5. And there's an EF 6 that's inconceivably strong that's never been invoked.
Yeah.
Yet.
And I think part of redoing the enhanced Fujita scale was improvement in buildings.
And the damage assessment based on how it gets wrecked. That's right.
Yeah.
He was at University of Chicago for a number of years. So, but from Japan originally.
Marcus, thanks. Appreciate the call. We have we haven't talked much about the stratosphere.
Stratosphere. I love the stratosphere. That's where all the ozone is that protects us from the ultraviolet rays of the sun.
There's this sudden warming going on in the stratosphere.
Yeah. One of our faculty, actually transplant faculty, Andrea Lang, is a world expert on this kind of stuff. And we just recently got her back here, which is great. And she was talking about this last Tuesday at our group meeting, which I had to miss because of another meeting, unfortunately. But there is signs of a sudden stratospheric warming going on now. The funny thing about if they go on in late February, early March, is that it might be the last warming of the year because the stratospheric polar vortex, which is up around 50 or so millibars or even higher than that, 15 or 20 miles above the ground, it establishes itself in October and then it kind of decays in March to April. And this might be the last time that the thing is intact. And that can sometimes unleash desperately cold air over parts of the hemisphere. But you never know exactly where. That's the interesting thing about
it.
And
I heard snow, too.
Probably coming along with the cold. It could be, yeah. But it's the cold that's really the thing that catches people's attention with these warmings, ironically. But the stratosphere is in a different part of the deep atmosphere. That's why it's not as ironic as it sounds.
And it goes one direction. I mean, it rotates or revolves in one direction, and then it can almost switch, can't it?
Well, it tends to get split in half. And so places that are having a westerly wind can suddenly have an easterly wind because the broad vortex is split into two pieces, and the easterly part might be sitting over like Winnipeg or something. And it had been the westerly part. So, yeah, it can. That's right. The wind can actually change direction at a given station way up in the stratosphere.
And how fast is it going up there?
Oh, 120, 150 meters per second. 120, I guess 90 to 120 meters per second. Really fast. 200 miles an hour sometimes.
But it's not very dense. So it's
Air is very,
very
thin.
Very, very
yeah.
Thin.
But it's an interesting feature. Very interesting.
I saw a piece in the Washington Post. Veronica Johnson became a black woman, became the new chief meteorologist for the D.C., one of the D.C. ABC affiliates. And there was quite a piece on the role of black members in the American Meteorological Society that says there's only 2% are involved. And is there any push or planning for trying to expand the diversity in meteorology? This is a totally different kind of question than what we normally deal with. But I wonder, it was a really interesting piece about Veronica and the few others who are doing the kind of job she does.
Yeah, there's, I think, in all the sciences where they're dominated by white males, like John and I, there is efforts to diversify, both in terms of having more women involved, but also people of color as well. And that's been going out for a long time. It just takes
yeah,
effort and will to make it happen.
I agree. It's been sort of a notable effort in the AMS from
American
my
Meteorological
30-year
Society.
Or so experience for at least the last 15 years. A really high-profile sort of notable aspect of our annual meeting, for instance, and various other programs that we're aware of being in the society. So, yeah, and you're right. It's going to take a long time. In fact, one of our the former director of the National Weather Service, Lou Uccellini, who's a graduate of our program, and some colleagues of his wrote a paper about some of the early leaders of the AMS from the turn of the century when it was founded in 1909. And they were eugenicists, some of these people. So this is a deep legacy of really ugly racism that goes back in this institution. And I don't think it's the only one. I think anything that was formed around that time was going to have that. And we're shedding it always more slowly than we wish.
Yeah. We've had some. I mean, Michael Morgan is one of our faculty who took a leave of absence, which is very annoying.
I think Charlie Anderson was president.
Anderson was president. Yeah. And Warren Washington was head of NCAR.
Yeah. So we've had some examples, of course, that people who have been exceptions, but we need to have they need to become the rule, not the exception.
Yeah, and with black women, it's really low.
Yeah.
Jamie in Algoma has a different question or a comment. Let's go there. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, I was responding to the gentleman who was talking about electrical storms being good for plants, thinking there's something special about the water.
Yeah.
My understanding of it is that the lightning itself releases nitrogen, which helps to green up plants, but it doesn't have anything to do with the water, but it's the lightning.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
good point.
That's sensible.
Yeah.
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate the call. There was one other thing I wanted to bring. Oh, community collaboration, Kokoroz. In the last minute or so, can you talk about getting citizens involved in this research and work?
Yeah, Kokoroz. I forget what the acronym stands
for. Me too. It's too long,
but it's too long.
Community
but you can say it
rain,
easy.
Rain, hail, and snow network.
Okay, there
right,
it is.
Yeah. So what you can do as a community member, you sign up and they tell you how to make these measurements. I participate not in the snowfall measurements because I really don't have a good place to do that where we are. We have too many trees. But I do have a rain gauge out, and so when it rains, I'm signed up, and when it rains, I go out and I make those measurements, and I put them out on the network, and then it gets distributed, not just to that community, Kokoroz, but it also gets out to the National Weather Service as well.
And how does something like the National Weather Service, how do they use it then?
What they used to use it for initially, and I think they probably still use it in different ways, is helping to calibrate the radars. So you get a radar, it's telling you it's raining. It may be raining heavy and what the intensity is, but you need those ground-based measurements to tell you how many inches it rained. And so it was very useful for that. And then I think also, even now, on the small scale, if you're worried about rivers flooding and things like that, if you have a lot of folks making those measurements, at better... It enables you to better assess what the potential for flooding might be.
And how do you get signed up for something? If somebody's interested in that, what the heck? It'd be kind of fun, I think.
It is a lot of fun. I just searched Kokoroz, and they tell you how to do it. C-O-C-O-R-A-S.
Yes, and the O's are lowercase, I think, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So even if you did volunteer rain gauge reporting, it would probably turn up as well.
I'll talk Clara into posting that up on
our
page today. If somebody wants to sign up for it, they can do that. And the weather, is it still raining out, John?
Yeah, it was raining on the way over, but lightly to moderately, so not so bad. It's almost over.
But it's February.
I know.
It's February. All right. Well...
Hey, it would have been a huge snow event if it had been.
It would have been, so I'm actually glad that it rained.
Most people shouldn't be complaining.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it very much. Our weather guy, Steve Ackerman, Vice Chancellor for Research and Grad Education at UW-Madison, and a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, John Martin, professor, former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, our guest. And they always come by the last Monday of the month, and they'll be here next month. What is that? March. They'll be the last week, the last Monday in March, they'll be back. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we'll be talking about how your dog responds to changes in its environment. And the shelter dogs, they act differently once they settle down into their new homes. We'll talk about that and, of course, answer your other pet questions. That's tomorrow at 11. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.